President Trump seems to vacillate. Oh, yes, I'm going to send Tomahawk missiles and that'll make a big difference. Then he talks to Putin on the phone. He says, well, maybe I won't do that. Maybe we need to tell the Ukrainians or ask the Ukrainians, where are you going to shoot them? You know, come on, give me a break. This is all nonsense. It's irrational nonsense. It's a combination of arrogance and ignorance in the worst sense of the word. And there's a failure to understand that we and the Europeans are playing with fire. The Russians aren't going to stand around and allow us to humiliate them in perpetuity. It's ridiculous. So bottom line is that he's well paid. He's one of your Fox News influencers, just like the influencers that our friend Bibi Netanyahu has purchased in the United States, who are being paid as much as $7,000 a post for something that advocates support for Israel against the Palestinians in Gaza or anywhere else. He's in the same boat. He picks up his check and his bank account is flush with millions in cash because he comes on and says these things. And it's not only the Israelis. I mean, if anybody has looked at the defense industries, they certainly have profited enormously from these wars and want to continue to do so. So there are people all over Washington, all over the United States, who are willing to throw money at someone like Jack Keane, because when he speaks, they introduce him as a general, four-star general. If a four-star general says it, it's got to be right. Wrong. I mean, we went through this in Vietnam. And let me tell you, William Westmoreland was a much better human being and a much better officer than many people give him credit for being. But he was wrong. And he was saying things that were outrageous, only I think he actually believed them. Hmm. I don't think that's the case right now. I think you're either on one team or the other. And that means you're with the Uniparty and everything the Uniparty wants to do, or you're out. You're edged out. You go to the land of Charlie Kirk and vanish.
Well, that's a darker version of it. But you mentioned something really got my attention. You said there this kind of arrogance and delusion. That's on the American side that we're talking here. Unfortunately, it's also very much on display at the European Union with Ursula von der Leyen.
And he is not hiding his glee and support for all of his obedient friends in Europe who are doing his work for him. This is the oldest trick in the book. Sow division, spread disinformation, create a scapegoat, all to turn Europeans against each other, to try to lower our guard while we fight each other, to weaken our resolve and our resilience. This is a trap.
So she's saying that obedient friends, what she was talking about there was Viktor Orban and Robert Fico from Slovakia, that they're not on board with blocking everything from the Russians and from supporting all these sanctions and everything else. They're much against that. Viktor Orban, we showed earlier this week in a comment that he made last week, where he's saying, listen, we're doing our own national interest. He goes, it would be economic suicide for us to just stop buying Russian oil. We're not going to do it. We have no interest in going to war with Russia, and we're going to go for our own national interest. And then to which you see Ursula von der Leyen then demonize them as being obedient friends of Vladimir Putin. How do you think that's going to play?
Well, did you look at the audience? I thought the snapshots of people sitting in the audience spoke millions of words. I mean, everybody's there like, you know, thanks, Ursula, for your brilliant leadership that's utterly destroyed the economy of Germany and most of Europe. Thank you, you and Mrs. Merkel and the others, for having opened our borders and admitted millions of people that did not come to become part of our society, but came to change us into them. Thank you for the rise in criminality, for the destruction of our law-based society. I don't think anything she says is any more taken completely seriously by anybody. And by the way, when she was the Secretary of Defense or Minister of Defense in Germany, the damage she did to the German armed forces was treasonous. And Merkel let her do it. And now Germany has nothing. But, you know, the Germans are slow to wake up. It takes time. And things are getting worse in Germany, not better. Germany is really on the skids. And at some point, it's going to bottom out the way it did in the Weimar Republic. And when that happens, everything will change. And I suspect von der Leyen and others will leave the country, lest they be imprisoned and eventually tried for treason against the German people. That's how bad it is. So I wouldn't pay too much attention to von der Leyen. And Orban is on the right side of history, as is Fico. They know the truth. They know what's right, what is wrong. And they have spared their populations tremendous suffering as a result.
Well, you talk about that not people paying attention. Unfortunately, she is the president of the European Union, so she does have a bully platform. But as you pointed out there, and those images that you saw where the people were really bored, one lady is just kind of on her phone, so they're not paying a lot of attention. The hall itself, when they had a big pan back, was pretty empty as well. Yeah, that was one of the good ones. But watch this clip here, because this somebody else finally got up and said something about it. And this is an EU parliamentarian from France, a woman named Aubry, and she has a different message for Ursula von der Leyen.
You've capitulated to Donald Trump, not just by supporting his neocolonialist plan for Gaza, but also by giving way on all of the economic demands of Europe to benefit the US. It's been a one-way street against democracy, the vassalization of the EU, and accepting the fascization of Europe. You should leave, Madame von der Leyen. You've acted against democracy with this Mercosur free trade agreement, disregarding national votes in parliaments and the unity of the member states. You're killing off our agriculture. You're poisoning with dangerous pesticides and destroying the planet. Madame von der Leyen, you should leave.
So that was a pretty strong, and Gary isolated some of the comments here when Ursula's being asked to leave, and he's like, that's not really liking that part there, but it's just not a lot of strength being shown there. And she's talking about divisions. She was talking about Ursula von der Leyen was about divisions between Fico and Orban, but obviously that's not the only ones. How do you see that in terms of fracturing, and where is Europe as a whole right now?
Well, look, von der Leyen is essentially the captain on the Titanic, and the bow is already underwater. The stern is rising. So the EU is on its way out. So is NATO. These things will continue until they can't. And that's coming sooner rather than later. So I think that's essentially what that very astute French woman had to say. And God bless her for standing up and saying it, because I know that that is a widespread feeling across Europe. Now, there are some Europeans who have a tougher time coming to terms with reality, in as far as the EU, or for that matter, NATO is concerned. But certainly on the continent, with the French, the Spaniards, the Italians, the Greeks, when you go into Austria or the Czech Republic just held an election. They elected a very staunch nationalist, very much a common sense man who is concerned with what's in the interest of the Czech people. And I'm confident that he is going to ally himself, for all intents and purposes, with others in Europe who feel the same way. This is over in Europe. Von der Leyen is finished. But these people will not leave until they are thrown out. That's coming. And von der Leyen will go out the way so many others have in the history of Europe, in a blaze of fire and storm and misery. But that's the way it has to be, because it's the only way for the Europeans to recover.
And unfortunately, the wreckage from all of that disaster that they have wreaked for the last 3.5 years will be smoldering ruins in Ukraine, and just bodies upon bodies stacked up in military cemeteries. And that will be the ultimate, I guess, legacy that these folks will have left behind. But
one thing, if I could mention it, you know, an example of colossal stupidity is in Poland, where the Polish government is not allowing rail connectivity to China. In other words, they've said nothing can come through Poland into the rest of Europe. Well, what are the Chinese shipping in that is so dangerous for the Europeans? Are they shipping in finished products that you can use in your home office? Is it automobile parts? I mean, exactly what is the danger of allowing China to ship goods into Germany and France, where there's obviously a demand for them? Well, I don't see it. And in fact, the sad part is that if you look at the map, there's a city in France called Rochefort, enormous harbor facility, some of the best in the world. You could run that rail line right into Rochefort. You could get on fast sea lift and you could ship straight to the United States. And oh, by the way, the United States could ship straight into Rochefort. And that same rail connectivity could be used by us to promote commerce. We've got to stop equating commercial prosperity with military danger. They're not the same. And the fact that a country is growing rich and prosperous from its trade doesn't make it an enemy of the United States or Europe or anybody else. The Poles have done something very stupid that's going to harm them for a long time. And the sad part is, as you and I both know, the Chinese, like the Russians and everyone else, will send all that material somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's not as though they don't have another market. Again, this goes back to President Trump's approach. Our market is the greatest in the world. No one can live without it. Wrong. That is not true anymore. And that's what we're finding out. So the whole tariff concept was always a dead end from the beginning. It was going to lead us nowhere. It was going to jack up prices here and it was going to offend everybody. And what the French woman said was accurate. What about this agreement you signed with Donald Trump? That stuff's never going to happen because it's not in the interest of the various members of the European Union to sign up for their own destruction. And again, it goes back to what we were talking about before, energy. Oh, sure, I'm Donald Trump. I'll send you liquefied natural gas. And I'll screw you to the wall while I do it. And that's business. And that's me. And I'm transactional. Great. Over the long run, that's not going to endear us to anybody. It's just going to make more enemies. It's a terrible situation right now.
It is. Yeah, across the board when you see that. And unfortunately, President Trump said some other things here recently, which also either have people scratching their heads, raising their eyebrows, or just outright being concerned. And I want to look at a couple of ones here because he said something really odd in the military sphere that kind of echoing some terms that was said to the U.S. generals when they were in town a week or so ago that, you know, we're getting rid of this whole DEI woke culture, whatever. And there was a lot of things that needed to be gotten out. But unfortunately, I'm not sure that he really understands what even that means, because yesterday at this naval meeting here, he said this.
Problem with Vietnam, we stopped fighting to win. We would have won easy. We would have won Afghanistan easy. We would have won every war easy. But we got politically correct. Oh, let's take it easy. We're not politically correct anymore, just so you understand. We win. Now we win.
What does that mean? He said we would have won Vietnam easily if we hadn't have been, you know, woke and all that and DEI. And if we hadn't have been woke, we could have won Vietnam easy. All these would have been easy along with Afghanistan. But he's the one that signed the protocols wisely, I'll point out, to end the Afghanistan war with the, I think it was called the Doha Protocols in 2020. And now he's going back and saying, well, it was only the woke military. What do you make of that?
What this inevitably boils down to when you talk to a veteran who was in Vietnam, who's bitter and angry, and I've certainly talked to many of them. Most of them now are far older than I am. But they would say, you know, we had enough firepower, we could have killed everyone. Well, that's a marvelous solution, isn't it? And that effectively is what it boils down to. Here is Vietnam, a country in Southeast Asia of no strategic importance to the United States whatsoever, not in the fundamental sense. We decide to intervene in that country and what turned out to be essentially a civil war. We paid no attention to anybody who told us what they had encountered, what they'd learned, like the French, but not just the French, also the British and others. We went into that country and the first soldiers and Marines and so forth that landed weren't even sure what their mission was, let alone the objective. There's a very famous event that I'm afraid President Trump is unaware of. And that happened when Lyndon Baines Johnson, as I recollect, in 1967, asked General Omar Bradley, General of the Army Omar Bradley, to go to Vietnam and evaluate what was happening over there and then come back and tell him. He was over there, I think, for almost 2 months. He came back, he walked into the Oval Office with the president, and LBJ said, well, General, what did you find out? And General Bradley said, well, I can't find anyone from the rank of sergeant or captain all the way up to four stars who really understands what it is they're trying to do. He said, well, what do you mean? He said, they don't understand what they're there for. They don't know what the mission is. And LBJ said, well, that's unbelievable. I can't believe that. And he said, well, why don't you come back, or why don't you take this legal pad that was on his desk, and General Bradley handed him the legal pad and said, write out the mission. Explain what we're doing in Vietnam. And so LBJ took the pen and he started to write. And you know, there are a lot of things here and it's going to take me some time. And so Omar Bradley said, if you can't write down what the mission of our forces is in Vietnam right now, in the next few minutes, get out. Well, gosh, Omar Bradley was right. You know, this was the problem in Korea. You know, everybody wanted, you know, Eisenhower was being lobbied to extend the war in Korea. And he went into, when he went over to Korea, he never promised that he would end the war in Korea. He never said that. He simply said, I will go to Korea. So he went to Korea and he got a briefing. And the briefing was given to him by General Mark Clark, who had been placed in command on the ground in Korea. And Mark Clark gave him this wonderful briefing and said, we need, in order to win this war, 830,000 men in the 8th Army. And with that force, we can march into Manchuria, swing around, and move into China and put an end to this war. Well, Eisenhower sort of listened. He knew Mark Clark from the Second World War. He didn't want to say a lot. He said, thank you, got up and walked outside, turned to his military assistant, who was General Goodpaster. And he said to Goodpaster, he said, this is insane. The United States isn't interested in going to war with China. You know, we're not going to draft in millions of men to supply an 830,000 man army to fight the war in Korea. We have to end this war. So what did he do? He said, no, we're going to restore the 38th parallel. We're going to negotiate with the enemy. We're going to end the war. The American people don't want it, don't need it. It's irrelevant strategically to us. And by the way, if you go back far enough, it's MacArthur who, after World War II, recommended that we vacate Korea completely, because he said it's very difficult to defend this peninsula against a determined land power like China. If they really want to take it, why are we in the way? We can't fight that war. That's not something we want to do. Remember, people had this crazy notion that you don't want to fight a land war in Asia against Christians, people that have inexhaustible quantities of people. You know, look, all of this is craziness. And Donald Trump is out of touch with reality. And again, this is something you and I have discussed on more than one occasion. People have lost their fear of this thing called war. And it's a terrible mistake.
And one more piece from that same speech, which I think really underscores exactly what you're saying, is this: not only is there not a fear of war, but there is an unsubstantiated confidence in our military power.
We're gathered on this storied waterfront to celebrate 250 years of strength, tenacity, and unwavering courage by the greatest fighting force even. And that's true. No matter where you go, no matter where you go, no matter what you even think about, there's nothing like the fighting force that we have. Roam the seas, it's called the United States Navy, and there's nothing in the world like it. Docked beside us today are a combined 150,000 tons of pure American naval supremacy and two colossal reasons why no one should ever want to start a fight with the USA.
You know, that kind of echoes something that one of the weirder parts, I'll say, of Secretary of War Hegseth's comments to the generals the other day when he was berating them on so many different fronts. And yet he said, we are the most powerful military on the history of the planet, bar none. Nobody else can even come close to it, which seemed to undercut the whole comment that there was a lot of things that need to be supplied. But the point being that they think that at the top leadership that we are basically an unstoppable military force. And that comes in the light of maybe we're going to go back into Iran, or maybe we're going to go into Venezuela. Apparently there's some movement on that too. What do you see as the concerns about this belief that we have this, the best military in the history of the world still today?
Well, I think we've heard this on many, many occasions. You know, the Japanese certainly made these noises in November, December of 1941. The British were convinced of this when they sent the Prince of Wales towards Singapore in 1942. The Prince of Wales is now comfortably on the bottom of the Pacific Ocean, as is most of the Imperial Japanese Navy. Our forces are legacy forces. They are a structure that rests comfortably on the foundation of the Second World War. We are in a period of very rapid and unpredictable technological change. The force that we have, as good as it is vulnerable in many, many ways. If we continue to push our way into other people's countries, if we continue to interfere in the affairs of other people overseas, eventually they will use the capabilities that are emerging right now to destroy or neutralize the forces that President Trump is extolling. In other words, for every measure, Daniel, there is a countermeasure. We know that only so well. And you could be the best at whatever you do this week, and 2 weeks later, it's not quite what you thought it was because something else has happened. The Germans found this out repeatedly. And when they figured out that they needed something other than what they had, it was too late in the war to build it because they didn't have the industrial capacity to keep up. We don't have the industrial capacity to keep up either at this point. What is really required right now in the United States' interest in national security is that we need to retrench. We need to come home. We need to shed these unnecessary overseas commitments. We need to get control of ourselves. Who is in our country? Are these borders and literal waters? And I'm not just talking about the Mexican border, all of our land borders, as well as the borders on the oceans. Are they secure? No, they're not. We are still seeing massive drugs and massive criminals find their way into the United States. Someone sent me something earlier today and said, we need to go after these people in Venezuela. Look what they did to Lincoln Riley. Well, I remember Lincoln Riley. That was a horrible tragedy. This criminal from Venezuela did terrible things and murdered that girl. How did that person get into the United States? That person walked through an open door created by President Biden and Mr. Mayorkas. You know, if anything, they are to be blamed for what happened to that girl. That was simply a criminal Venezuela unloaded. But do we attack Venezuela and kill tens of thousands of people because a Venezuelan criminal inside the United States murdered one of our citizens? I don't think so. I think what we need to do is enforce the law at home. Round up these people that don't belong in our country and send them back and shut down immigration until we know who's inside the United States. We can't pretend it's business as usual anymore. It's not. But instead of taking those things seriously, adopting sensible measures that are not all that expensive, that are relatively easy to implement, what are we doing? We're cultivating a new war in Venezuela. And that makes no sense at all. I don't care whether you like Maduro or anybody else who happens to govern in South America or Central America. We don't need to do that. We can cut all the drug problems off at the border and in our coastal waters if we want to do it. And that's something we need to do. But it's also, you've got to make some hard choices. Instead of blaming Venezuela, we need to go after the people that come into this country illegally. And we need to go after the people that disseminate the drugs. We need to go after the people who are engaged in child trafficking. And the punishment for these people should be as severe as we can make it. You know, this is no time for us to indulge criminality. If we are not prepared, if we're prepared to go halfway around the world to kill people we don't know who present no threat to us at all, I should think we should see the virtue in dealing with the criminals that we have right here at home instead of going overseas to find people we don't like. Doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. There's a lot of things that we could do differently that would actually produce a more secure and safe and prosperous country. And I'd like to see us go down that path. But as always, we're very grateful to you for coming on, for providing such clarity on these things so that we see that there is a path that can actually help us. And there is a path that we can harm ourselves more. And if we can avoid the one and cling to the other, then there still is a hope for our future. We'll have to see if our leaders can actually wake up and see that kind of stuff. But all we can do is provide the truth and the evidence that you do here. And so we're very grateful for that.
Okay, thanks, dear.
And by the way, before I let you go here, we had been highlighting this October 4th meeting you had in Dallas a little bit. And so a lot of people were wondering what came of that. And I wonder if there's anything you can tell us about it.
Well, I need to provide you with some photographs, and we did videotape it, and we will pull out excerpts of the evening because we had some very impressive people speak. And I think it was very well received. It was sold out, so there were no seats.
Everything
sold out. And we will do it again. We have not yet decided which city we will go to and when, but that decision will be made in the near future. But it was not just the people that were there to speak. Judge Napolitano turned in a bravura performance, really, explaining what is constitutional, what isn't, and the importance of the law and how to think about it. Natalie Brunel came in and answered everybody's potential question about digital currency better than I've heard from anybody in the country. But then we had people in the audience who also spoke, and one of them was a lady, spoke in perfect English, very, very impressive woman, very smart, but she had lost 22 family members in Gaza, all Christian Palestinians. These particular people were Roman Catholics, and they were members of a church which is arguably, if not the oldest Christian church in the world, perhaps the second oldest. And, of course, these people tried to protect the church, and they were killed by a mix of airstrikes, tank ammunition, and snipers. I asked her if she would please speak, and grudgingly she did, and she broke down because how could you not? But she was there, as there were several people that came from all over the country saying, you know, thank God for you. You are saying the truth. You're telling the truth. And we all want this to end, and we want it to end as soon as possible. And of course, the problem is we all agree, but we don't have the authority or the power to influence government. The government is under somebody else's influence, and it's not American.
Well, we'll have to do whatever we can to change that dynamic. And as I understand, that's part of what your conversation was. And we look forward to that continuing to expand. And we'd love to promote some of that next time you have opportunity with whether it's Natalie or some of these others or some of your videos here. We'd love to expand that and amplify this message because we certainly believe in it as well. Thank you very much, Doug. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan.
And thank you guys very much, too. To let you know, we'll be back at, 2 o'clock today with Glenn Deason. We're going to be talking about some things he has learned in Russia recently. Also to point out that we are on podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict. Let your friends know that we're there because some people I know don't even watch a lot of videos, but they love podcasts. Let them know that they can get the truth there as well. We're also on the written form at Substack. You can go to DanielDavisDeepDive.substack.com and you can find us the written materials there as well as some of the videos posted. So one way or the other, however you get your information, make sure your friends know. Do not keep this to yourself, folks. We need to spread this word. It's been working, and we appreciate what you guys have been doing. We ask you to do a little bit more. Thank you very much, folks, and we'll see you here in a little bit on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.